Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Contreras has done it again. In a heartbeat, number two.
Unlike the changeup, this time it was a low fastball. A line drive rocket, wind or no wind, this is going out of the ballpark.
Do they don't want to get some more run for Caratini? Maybe just like a couple innings.
Middays on the Score.
That was Jason Benetti on the call. Always fun to toggle back and forth between last night it was ABC 7 and Comcast, NBC Sports Chicago. NBC, yeah. Still always go there.
And same.
It's always fun to get these differing calls, and it makes it more fun when you know the people involved.
Yeah, it does. And good conversations with both Jason and Len all the time on this station.
And when you can text them while they're talking. And then you text there, and then it comes out.
But they're not a speak and say. You can't make them say what you want to say.
No, but it's not always.
Don't treat them like
sometimes
that.
Sometimes I'm receiving the text, not necessarily sending the text. It just makes it. It's a very interactive experience.
What a difficult life you live. What a difficult, difficult life you live.
It's a really fun way to consume baseball. Now, we're talking about Contreras and mentioning what he does and what he doesn't do. Now, look, I get it. I know that John Lester needs somebody policing the bases for him. And he also...
You mean from the arm standpoint of Wilson Contreras being able to throw?
Okay. The threat of it, showing the threat, reminding people that he can pop up like a viper and get somebody.
Right.
I mean, I understand that. The irony is he also, and maybe more so, needs that strike zone massaged in a way that we know catchers massage the strike zone. And Matthew Trueblood of Baseball Prospectus was responding to a Twitter follower who said, let's not overvalue framing here. Contreras has a 954 OPS and a cannon. And this was his response in a series of tweets. Framing is literally a catcher's most important job. It's more important than hitting or throwing or blocking, or even game calling. All those things matter too, which is why Contreras is an above average catcher on the whole. But his poor framing dramatically hurts his value. Now here's the cross-sport comparison. Tell me if you agree or disagree.
Okay.
Calling Wilson Contreras the best catcher in baseball is like if you called Dennis Rodman the best power forward in the NBA. Dennis Rodman did a lot of things well, but he utterly lacked the highest value skill a basketball player can have. And he was never as good as Karl Malone, or Barkley, McHale, Garnett. He wasn't better than Sean Kemp, or Horace Grant, or Anthony Mason, or a bunch of other people at their best. We can praise players while remaining cognizant of their flaws, great or trivial.
Absolutely true. And I think it's a couple things are important to remember when it comes to Wilson Contreras and this Cubs team in particular. One, it is more fun to watch Wilson Contreras than it is Austin Hedges for most people. If you don't know, Austin Hedges is the catcher for the Padres. He's 25, 26 years old. He is one hell of a pitch framer. Think of it as he's not that great of a hitter. He's okay. He's fine. But it's a lot more fun for people to watch Wilson Contreras hit dingers against Lucas Giolito than it is to watch Austin Hedges make that, you know, 2-2 slider look more like a strike for Chris Paddock whenever he comes back into the big, you know what I mean? That's not something that many baseball fans can see when they're watching a broadcast. So that's going to make Wilson Contreras more exciting for people right off the bat. The other one is this: pitch framing is a giant part of a catcher's job. And I'm not going to go against Trueblood's opinion that it's the most important part, but some have, you know, kind of called into question just how important is pitch framing. The other thing is this, for baseball fans who, you know, hear the pitch framing thing and go, oh my God, we're doing this again, that kind of thing. You got to remember that pitch framing isn't just, let's make this ball look like a strike. It's also making sure that the strikes are called strikes. It's making sure that you don't lose that pitch that is a strike for the guy throwing the strike. Some of that you can't help. Some of that, you get the strike zone you had last night, and Lucas Giolito is just looking into the heavens thinking, my God, what's going on? Or Ryan Cordell gets ball four, called a strike three, and then has to walk off really angry because he had an at-bat taken away from him by the home plate umpire. That's going to happen, and a catcher can't help some of that. But much of this is, a lot of this is, making sure the strikes are still strikes and not losing them to the batter or to the umpire.
Because those add up to runs.
And fast.
Very, very quickly in your run prevention matrices. So if you ask, all right, who's objectively the best catcher in baseball? It's Yasmani Grandal. Yasmani Grandal is worth 2.8 wins above replacement per Fangraphs. JT Realmuto is second at 2.6. And Wilson Contreras, despite negative defensive numbers, framing is now a part of Fangraphs war.
Right.
Wilson Contreras is third. He's a really good catcher.
He's really good.
He's really good. Probably going to be an all-star. He's a two-win catcher. Gary Sanchez at 1.8 wins. Christian Vasquez of the Red Sox at 1.8. Robinson Chirinos, the Astros, a guy who's had
He's 94.
Career. Yeah, he was a Cub prospect.
He was in the Garza Matt Garza deal.
Yep. He was.
Him and Hakju Lee, I think?
Yep, you're indeed. That he's still hanging around and making himself valuable, as is Omar Narvaez with his potent bat at 1.3 wins per over replacement. He is seventh. But look, Wilson Contreras is good. It just, even though you may not want it to matter, and I don't want it to matter either. I don't want umpire fooling to matter. I think it'd be great if we had machines determining what is a strike and what is not a strike. That's awesome. If you want to get rid of pitch framing, that's fine. But the fact is, it's incredibly, incredibly, incredibly important in modern baseball. Know what else is going on in modern baseball?
Let's see. Launch angle, spin rates. There's a pretty good book out about some of this stuff recently. Oh, and guys are playing with fun now. We're allowed to play for fun.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, they're also playing with a golf ball.
Yeah, that's a small problem.
It's not a small problem. And whether you want to call it a problem or not depends on your perspective. So I think we should get some perspective.
Yeah.
We've been around Joe Maddon a lot. We've talked to Joe Maddon a lot. Have you ever heard him sound like he did last night in talking about this?
The only thing that I can think of that Joe's gone this hard on, you know, so quickly after a ball game, is when the Cardinals wanted to start a dust-up war, and he started going in on, we won't start stuff, but we'll finish stuff. You remember that speech that Joe gave after the ball game in the dungeon down there at Wrigley Field? That's the only other thing I can think of where he just so poignantly, after a game, addressed a specific issue like this that's out of his control.
All right, here's Joe Maddon from last night.
Wind blowing in at a gale, it seemed. Ball flying out easily. It was just the home run that McCann hit, God, that just took off. You could actually see it from the field. And you watch the flags doing this. It gets there. Then all of a sudden it did this. Somebody's got a UFO just took off. Like it stood still and then it took off. Even the first home run of the game, the first pitch. I mean, my God, that ball went far. I don't know what I'm witnessing, but the way the ball is coming off the bat right now is, I guess it's extraterrestrial. Is that what I'm trying to say? So. It's like a ET kind of a thing going on out there. It's crazy, because I know I've been in my fifth year, and I know what I've seen. And whenever the wind's blowing in like that, you don't see that. You don't see that.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
Wow. That isn't just like, yeah, well, maybe it's fine a little bit. That's, oh my God. He saw it with his own eyes. He's not giving you launch angle or exit velocity or the distance it's traveling, but that all backs it up.
Cubs manager sees it. Former White Sox manager Ozzie Guillen has an idea of what may be going on. This is after the game yesterday on NBC Sports Chicago.
I know it was cold and raining.
Yeah, it was nasty out there.
And the ball's juice. Yeah, so when they're blowing down, blowing out, when blowing away, when the flag went to right field.
I think the ball's a little harder.
I think the ball's juice.
All right. Something's up.
We have something is up.
He said the ball's juice?
It's juiced,
oh,
Dan.
Juiced. Okay, I thought he said the ball's juiced. I thought he was saying something is the international monetary banking conspiracy is making the ball go further.
Why would that be a thing?
Yeah, he said the ball's juiced.
Why would that be a thing?
Yeah, it is. There's no doubt. They've tested the drag coefficient, and the drag coefficient is lower. And that's just a fancy way of saying the ball is more aerodynamic. That's why I'm calling it a golf ball. You know when you see a pro hit a ball, or you're at the driving range.
Talking about golf ball, yeah.
And you watch the club champ, And it, there's like that extra, depending on the spin, there's like that it extra rise.
It's like a takeoff.
Yes.
It's got that thing.
It starts and then it's... Puts on
the afterburners.
Right. That's what Joe's talking about.
Mm.
That's what Joe... On the McCann homer. That's what Joe's talking about. So I am hyperbolizing when I'm describing it as a golf ball. But it's the best way to imagine some of these trajectories being as unnatural as they are. But the truth is... There's nothing you can do about it. And, you know, we should talk to Taylor Davis about it because he understands at the AAA level, they just went to that ball this year.
Everyone hits homers.
We were holding it. We were sitting in the bleachers. Yeah. It feels different.
I held on to a couple over the last, you know, 16 and 17 and then 17 and 18, and you can tell differences there. This one, though, and John Lester's talked about it, Joe Madden's talked about it some, the cover itself feels different. You know what I mean? Like, there's just a slickness to it. There is, John was saying, and so was, Syndergaard. The Mets, he was talking about how chips of it were kind of flaking off underneath his fingernails.
Uh-huh.
And you got to remember, like, pitchers most keep their fingernails so short anyway so as to get as much finger surface area on the baseball as you can. So to lose some of that underneath fingernails that are as short as most of these guys keep them anyway... That's a thing.
But Theo Epstein understood, as he mentioned to the Mully and Haw show today, he understands that it simply is. This is the world in which they live. It is yet another environmental factor that has all teams dealing with the same thing.
It's the same for everybody. So I think, you know, the ball's obviously carrying better this year. It's showing it doesn't have quite as much drag, and so that means it's going to coast. It's just part of the playing environment. Every year there's going to be different variables, how the ball is playing or the weather, different environmental things, the strike zone changes, different environmental things that affect the batter pitcher dynamic, and they apply the same to everybody. So, you know, you just have to figure out what it rewards, and when the ball is carrying like it is this year, it just rewards the teams that make a lot of contact and get the ball in the air. So it's just important that we continue to do that, but it's certainly helped us as much as it's hurt us.
Fair enough. The problem is that when that next boat arrives from Costa Rica or wherever the factory is right now for Rawlings, and it's different again, yet, quote-unquote, still within their parameters, MLB insists that there's a range of liveliness, range of drag coefficients. When you start trying to build a team and trying to optimize a roster and skill sets over the ball that you're playing with, and then they change it on you and you don't know, then what?
That's the answer to a good question asked here by the 847. Both teams use the same ball, so what's the point here? That is, Theo mentioned it, Dan just mentioned it, that is the point, is if the equipment changes on you as quickly as this baseball has... And again, this is something that baseball has talked about. The offices of Major League Baseball, we've had Alan Nathan on the show. He's a physicist at Illinois who's done a lot of pioneering work on trying to figure out how the baseball has changed. If just within the margins of what is an okay baseball, if that changes, if the consistency, the machinery, all that stuff, all these little variables can't, according to Major League Baseball, can change on their own when they shift the machining process for these things, then you get baseball played the way we've been playing baseball the last 2 years or so. So to the question, well, everybody's playing with the same baseball. That's true. But not everybody counted on this baseball when they constructed the team the way they did. So if it just so happens that this new piece of equipment means your team isn't as good as you thought it would be, but nobody told you that the baseball was going to be this way, you could understand somebody being kind of upset about that.
There are several good questions on the text line here. This from the 708. Do they still rub the balls with mud, or is that changed in some way too? No. Apparently they don't. It used to be an umpire's responsibility to get a special can of mud from the bottom of the Delaware River and rub down all the balls, and I guess they do not do that anymore. A different 708 texter says, curious, have the StatCast metrics been around long enough to compare a ball from the current era to the one before? A ball hit at 103 miles an hour at 20-degree angle now before, is it going farther? Yes, 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 yes,
all of it,
and
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not only is it available, the data's in. The conclusions are in.
Right.
The same trajectory the same exit velocity, the same launch angle, in the same environmental circumstances. Park, wind, temperature is going significantly farther.
It's making pitchers mad. It's got Joe Maddon talking after the game. It's got Theo talking about it to Mully and Haw this morning. Awesome to play it all for you. That's some important stuff. We are going to talk with Taylor Davis. He is the catcher for the Iowa Cubs. Why? Well, A, he's fun to talk to. B, he's caught Adbert Alzolay, who's on his way up to the big leagues. And C, he's caught Craig Kimbrell, who will be in the big league shortly and closing game for the Cubs.
This segment brought to you by Arlington International Racecourse. They're off and running with live racing and entertainment at beautiful Arlington International Racecourse. Start your weekend right. Leave work early Friday for Miller Lite Party in the Park with live music, food, and $3 drink specials. Visit arlingtonpark.com for details and VIP experiences. Friend of the show, Taylor Davis, is next. Don't go anywhere. You've got Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Davis hits a high fly ball. Deep left field. Get out the tape measure. Grand slam. Grand slam, Taylor Davis. The ball game is tied at 5, and it's starting to feel like a Cubs-Cardinals Saturday afternoon at Wrigley.
Remember that time Taylor Davis hit that grand slam against the Cardinals?
Vividly, actually. Yeah. It was a hell of a day.
That was awesome.
Taylor Davis is on Twitter at Beans with a Z underscore TD. The Iowa Cubs catcher joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. And you say, well, why have Taylor Davis on other than the fact that he's just a really nice guy and fun to talk to and knows baseball?
That's
well,
enough for me.
Yeah, but there's all kinds of context here with Adbert Alzolay coming up and Craig Kimbrell on the way. How you been, Taylor?
Good. Yeah, absolutely. I've been doing well. I wish the reason for the phone call was similar to the last one, but yeah, no, it's everything else is going good.
I'm sure we'll have that phone call a little bit later on in the season. You'll have a couple of starts. Everything will be good. You'll get a couple of knocks. Which of the pitchers should we start with here? I'm guessing it's the guy you've caught most often in Adbert Alzolay, because how many pitches have you really caught from Craig Kimbrell so far as he's been on the AAA Iowa Cubs?
I think we can go ahead and throw in his 7 warm-ups and call it like 16.
Perfect.
Kimbrell went first pitch out, and I think the second hitter was 2 pitches, and the third hitter was 3 pitches, and he struck him out, and walked in and understood that. He goes, yeah, I need to strike out one guy. I mean, I guess that's fair, you know? But, we can talk about Adbert first. That's perfectly good.
Well, what's changed about him so much? Obviously, the injury set him back a whole bunch last season, but there were some struggles, both with command and with stuff, as I understand it, and he's really pulled things together to get his call to the bigs just today.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it, if you look back to even before he got hurt, there was a lot of him kind of being not held back, but slowing down. The organization slowed him down. I don't think, he was pretty much throwing, 4 to 5 innings pretty much every year before he got hurt. This year he's kind of had a little bit of a longer leash. And honestly, the breaking ball has gotten better. The velo's there. The command has been there. And the one thing that I tell everybody about this kid, and the reason that I think he's the truth, is because he works hard. He cares. He's a good person. You want to root for him. That's always a bonus, especially when you already have everything else. He's got everything else. He's got the 97-mile-an-hour fastball. He's got the swing-and-miss breaking ball when you know it's coming, and he's got the changeup that he can throw at any count. So I'm excited for Cubs fans. I've been excited for this moment for years, for the last 2 years, because I think this kid's really special.
What's the tilt like on the breaking ball? I've heard the term slider used. I've heard the term curve used. And we know now that understanding the vertical spin axis and horizontal spin axis is important, how much sideways movement it has and how it can be tunneled up with that fastball.
Yeah, I think That's a good question. Somebody smarter than me can probably answer that. I think that he does adjust it every now and again, though. I think he can throw a little bit of both. You'll occasionally get the bigger one with the higher vertical movement, and then you'll get the one with the horizontal movement. He's got a clue on the mound, which is, you know, obviously something that I love to have as somebody that knows what he's doing. And so he's able to add and subtract when he needs to.
It's nice to have somebody you can work with as opposed to work against. That doesn't happen for a lot of young pitchers, guys who are 24 or like Adbert is.
Exactly. Like I said, you know, with as hard as he works and everything that he puts into the game and the ability for him to go out there and trust us when we're putting down fingers, and then he just, I mean, at the end of the day, we can talk about how good does the spin of the breaking ball, whatever. Look, man, he throws it by bats, and that's the important thing.
Tiger Cubs catcher Taylor Davis here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Adbert Alzolay's on his way up. Craig Kimbrel hopefully soon. What would you say, you know, Adbert's on his way. He's probably going to work out of the bullpen some. He'll get a start or two. What does he need to do? What does really any AAA starter that has to go into the bullpen for a big league team need to focus on most? What would your advice be to, kind of shorten the workload for a guy like that?
For Adbert, I think the big thing is just understanding the bullpen. You know, he's been a starter for so long. I don't want him to get too ramped up. I want him to keep that same mentality. The fun thing for Cubs fans is you're probably going to get to see a little bit. You're going to get to see an Adbert Alzolay that'll be a tick up because he's in the bullpen. The velo should spike a little bit. But, you know, the reality is I just want him to go out there and get ahead. He needs to go out there. He needs to throw strikes and get ahead of hitters. If he gets ahead of guys, he is – and I know that is a cliche, but when you have the kind of stuff that he has, if he can get ahead of you, it's really hard to get out of that hole.
Craig Kimbrel was on the mound. You were behind the plate. What did it look like from your perspective?
Man, you don't ever want to look down the barrel of that gun. not in the batter's box. I'll tell you that much. Obviously it was not very much, but the guy's arguably already one of the best of all time, if not the best. He'll probably go down as the best of all time as a closer. So, I mean, you know, the stuff is incredible. As a person, unbelievable. Yeah, he fit right in. You would have had no idea. The stuff just... what I told people was it was the heaviest fastball I've ever caught. And most of the time when you say that, it's because the ball sinks. So his ball didn't sink. It stayed true, and it was really heavy. But it was a lot of fun. It was a exciting experience for me and not as exciting for the hitters.
I wonder how we quantify heavy now. Because is that
spin rate. You can
higher
quantify
spin,
it by
right?
spin rate.
Right.
It's lower spin. Lower spin.
Lower spin.
A higher spin rate. When you hear guys that throw rising fastballs, that's a higher spin rate. It means that it doesn't drop as much when it comes to the plate. A lower spin rate is going to seem heavier. So if I can throw really hard with as low as of possible as a spin rate, it'll seem what we call heavy. Just meaning that it seems really hard. When you throw that fastball, even if it's 100 at the really good spin rate, you feel like you can see it the whole way, and then you swing at it and you don't hit it. So it's really frustrating. They're both frustrating. But, yeah, the lower spin rate means that it is heavier. But I don't know his spin rates. I don't know. I haven't looked.
You figure Kimbrel has some rust on him. I mean, as I'm told, he is human. I'm pretty sure that's true. Is the rust conditioning for him? Like, can you see any rust on mechanics or on stuff? I mean, it sounds like he's clicking at 100 cylinders. I mean, it's not looking like it's anything that'd keep him out of the bigs.
Yeah, no, I think everybody, you know, wants to face as many hitters as they need to before they're ready. I think. But, yeah, I mean, he looked good. I don't know. You know, there's no better answer for me to give you. I mean, look, like I said, dude, he's one of the greatest closers of all time. He's striking out like, what was it, 2 years ago, he struck out like half the league.
Yeah.
I don't know how much rust could possibly be on there. Like, this guy's like built a platinum. I don't know.
We are talking with Iowa Cubs catcher Taylor Davis on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Triple-A baseball has been part of this experiment, I guess, for lack of a better term, this year. Ever since switching to the major league ball, as expected, home runs through the roof. This Titleist, whatever this is cutting through the air in a way that no one has ever seen before. Joe Maddon talked about it last night. He described it as extraterrestrial. He says it's taking off like a UFO. What has been the talk around AAA as you guys have seen this firsthand?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the ball's moving a little different. Absolutely. But to me, personally as a catcher, I think it was really important that this happened because I think you saw far too often pitchers go to the big leagues and come back down and would really struggle when they got back down here. And I would always question, I would always ask the pitching coaches or the players themselves, why is this? Why is this such a phenomenon that we're noticing? And nobody really had a good answer. And then I thought about the fact that they're throwing with two different baseballs. And somebody had brought that up to me, like, hey, you know, we're going to the big leagues throwing this ball with no laces. We're coming back down here throwing this ball with six laces. So, yes, is the hitting getting, you know, exacerbated down here? Absolutely. Guys are hitting more home runs, so be it. But pitchers are able to keep their feel. And at the end of the day, the reason we are here is to make the team up there better, and I think that's doing that here. So I think it's very beneficial that we have the Major League Baseball. So be it that there's an extra two home runs a game, or whatever there may be. I'm sure there's not that much. But whatever there may be, I think it's worth it so that these guys can keep their stuff going, can keep throwing their bullpens, can keep throwing their pitches, and keep working using the same baseball they're going to use to help the big league team win.
So, Taylor, I'm looking through a couple of game logs for Dylan Maples, and when the Cubs sent him down, Joe Maddon said, this is the last time I want to have this conversation with you. Things are going to be fine for you at AAA Iowa. We'll bring you back up, and you should be good to go. This dude hasn't given up a damn thing in a long time and a bunch of strikeouts. Did you slap him around a little bit 2 weeks ago? What did you fix with Dylan Maples? Because good Lord.
No, I mean, you know, Dylan is, look, you know, everybody knows Dylan's got the stuff. The stuff has never been a question. I think there is a legitimate argument to be made. This will be probably a headline somewhere online, like clickbait or something.
Awesome.
I think there's a legitimate argument to be made, though, that he has the best stuff in baseball. And I don't mean he's the best pitcher in baseball. By no means do I mean that. But I do think that his three-pitch mix may be better, nastier, or whatever, however you want to say it, than anybody else in the game. It is really, really impressive. And his ability to throw those three pitches day in and day out, it's just unbelievable. I really think that this kid has got a long future because he's, as you see, he misses a lot of bats and the takes are bad. Like if you guys ever get a chance to go watch him pitch, you know, you see him pitch in the big leagues and they get bad takes. Just imagine what they do down here. The guys, you don't see anything like this, especially, you know, not in AAA. So he's been looking really good. He's been dominant. But, you know, this whole bullpen has been dominant. This has been a really good year for AAA all the way around. We're hitting the ball well. We've got some starters throwing the ball well. The bullpen has been an absolute joke. And the bullpen has helped up there some, too. So,
how often are you consulted on things like this? Just out of curiosity, I know that everybody's got data. And I know the cameras are there. And I know there's a lot of this organization. There's just smart people crawling all over everything. But it's also an organization that wants to hear input and doesn't mind anecdotal, doesn't mind some subjective. It's one thing to offer this to us. Are you giving these same kind of unvarnished opinions to people within the organization?
Yeah, I think, you know, look, people in baseball in general, it's kind of turning into like an iRobot movie, right? Like there are a lot of machines pumping out a lot of numbers. Even in the draft and scouting, everything's changing, right? Guys are looking at the numbers instead of looking at the players. But at the end of the day, the human element is still a factor. The eye still matters. There's still scouts and area scouts for a reason. So yeah, you know, I'm definitely giving opinions whenever asked. I would say my opinions as the player are more after the fact. So my opinions at Bear is a little different, but let's just say we, you know, had got somebody new. I'd caught him a couple times and he gets called up. Well, after he got called up, I may get a phone call or a text. Hey, Has he been thrown? What are we going to do here? What do we need to work? What do we need to watch? Stuff like that. But no, not a whole bunch. For the most part, the coaches, you know, your coaching staff does a really good job of that. But, yeah, I mean, whenever I'm asked, I give honest opinions for sure.
Taylor, appreciate it as always, man. Great talking with you. Everybody loves hearing from you. Best of luck down there. Hit some dingers.
Thank you. I'll try.
That is Taylor Davis. Always a delight to talk baseball with him on these airwaves. The bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you and see you in October. Boy, we've been really baseball intensive with a lot of good sound, a lot of strong opinions. And tonight it is the NBA draft. The coverage of that is going to be right there for you at 670thescore.com. Use the radio.com app. Chuck Swirsky, Bill Wennington, Steve Cashel, Cody Westerla, David Schuster, Tony Gill, live from 6 to 10 p.m. following everything. I'm going to be following along. I'm probably going to be writing about it as soon as that pick is made. Looking forward to that. We're going to have Sam Vecenie joining us from the Game Theory podcast to give us his basketball thoughts, his draft thoughts, Bulls thoughts. That'll be after Len Casper at 11. But coming up next, the Midday Midway, I have one of my favorite kinds of stories, a signature Midday Midway story. And everyone sees these and they immediately send them to me. And I thank you for it. Also, RoboCop is real.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit about meth as well and human evolution. The Midday Midway is on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Midday Midway brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. We talk baseball. Oh, I got to hose myself off. That was the baseball porn with Taylor Davis. And that was after an hour of wall-to-wall sound and talk about not just yesterday's game, but the newly promoted Adbert Alzolay.
Adbert,
it's
we
like
learned.
The Colbert Report. It's not Adbert. It's Adbert. So he is going to be joining the Cubs, and we got the full scouting report on him and on Craig Kimbrell as he works his way back.
And on Dylan Maples. If you thought I had a Dylan Maples problem before.
How about it?
Oh, man.
Discuss the baseball, what's going on there, and Joe Maddon talking very openly about what he thinks is something extraterrestrial or it's flubber regarding the behavior of the baseball.
All right, hold on to your butts. This is from the Washington Post, and it just came out this morning. Mobile technology has transformed the way we live, how we read, work, communicate, shop, and date. But we already knew this. What we have not yet grasped is the way the tiny machines in front of us are remolding our skeletons, possibly altering not just the behaviors we exhibit, but the bodies we inhabit.
What?
New research in biomechanics suggests that young people are developing horn-like spikes at the back of their skulls. These are bone spurs caused by the forward tilt of the head, which shifts weight from the spine to the muscles at the back of the head, causing bone growth in the connecting tendons and ligaments. The weight transfer that causes can cause buildup compared to the way skin thickens into a callus as a response to pressure or abrasion. The result is a hook or horn-like feature jutting out from the skull just above the neck. This is per a bunch of academic papers from a pair of researchers at the University of Sunshine Coast in Queensland, Australia.
Use of it? Can we like hang a coat on it?
Maybe. I don't know if they're calling it text neck. That's what we've got the text neck going on.
That's fascinating.
Isn't smartphones they've already changed. The internet changed humanity as it is. It could be argued that we are no longer Homo sapiens, that there is some second evolution of what we are based on how we use the world around us and the technology and everything.
But that's theoretical. Oh, that's not physiological.
Right. This is a physiological change that seems to be developing because people have their heads in their phones and now you're growing horns. It is a matter of moments until evangelicals mean that take that this to be a sign of the devil and then turn smartphones into things from hell, which they might already be.
That's amazing. And I actually heard something from a doctor who treats a lot of spinal stenosis patients. Mm-hmm. And more and younger, he is seeing people develop disorders from the same thing, from having their head down. And he always says, if you're going to be on your phone, keep your chin up. Hold your phone up.
Huh.
It is so much better for you. And he's
then holding it down.
A lot of patients are coming in. He's seeing people who essentially, in his words, have the neck of a 70 or 75-year-old in their mid-40s.
But Dan, if I'm holding my phone in front of my face, how am I going to see where I'm going when I'm driving?
And how are you going to develop your horn?
How do I do that?
What a perfect segue into this story as we speak of the value of horns. Because a group of rhino poachers were caught, and rangers gave chase. They were trying to flee the game park, and as they were fleeing in their Toyota, they hit a goat. The car overturned, and two of them were killed.
Oh, no.
And that's fine, because I have no time for rhino poachers, and no word on how the goat did. My guess is not well.
Probably not.
Because goat versus Toyota.
Bad matchup.
Probably a bad matchup, but in hot pursuit, they hit the goat. They overturned. Two other occupants of the vehicle survived, and they have been charged with poaching offenses, unlawful hunting of a specially protected animal, in violation of the Parks and Wildlife Act. This is all in Zimbabwe. And apparently what they're doing right now is rhinos are being given a special procedure. They don't know exactly what the procedure is, but it looks like the horns of these rhinos are being intentionally discolored or otherwise changed in a way to make them valueless, to somehow mean there's to render them of no market value to the poachers. Not damaging anything for the health and well-being of the rhino, maybe changing the look or the chemical composition somehow. I don't know exactly. It doesn't explain exactly what it is. But we're also learning that elephants are beginning to actually evolve tuskless.
No.
And artificially selecting, the tusked elephants are being poached.
Yeah.
Therefore,
they're dead.
They cannot pass along their genes that would also result in tusks. And it is possible, and it's happening so fast before our eyes, it is possible in our lifetime we could end up with mostly tuskless elephants because the evolutionary pressures are such that they live longer.
This from Fox 6 Now in Texas. The American alligator populates nearly every swamp, lake, and river, and occasional kitchen in the southeastern U.S., but when Erin Weaver spotted one swimming near her Houston home, she suspected it was in danger. Why? Because it looked like a steak knife sticking out of its head.
A steak knife
sticking out of its head.
What?
An alligator was swimming around a lake in Houston. I tweeted out the photo with a knife. Look at this. With a knife. Sticking out of its head.
Dude!
Yep, pretty clear. That's a knife sticking out of an alligator's head.
Did somebody have to fend it off from an attack with a steak? Was somebody in the middle of eating a steak?
I don't know.
Did it attack a steakhouse?
It took down an Outback. No, the woman who found it. So Rick walks around. The woman who found it says that she's never seen an alligator get aggressive around her house, which of course means they've never been aggressive anywhere. So it kind of, she's theorizing that someone did this on purpose, like buried a knife in an alligator just to watch it die, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's swimming around. It's fine. They called animal control. They tried to get the knife out of the head. Couldn't quite find the thing. So it's just, there is now an alligator swimming around with a knife sticking out of its head because it can survive. And has. It will now evolve alligators to have knives sticking out of their heads.
With freaking laser beams in their heads. RoboCop exists. We've made it long enough. We have lived long enough. We have RoboCop. I want you to picture RoboCop, right?
Yeah.
It's Peter Weller.
Yeah.
He's in the suit.
Sure.
Stay out of trouble, right? I wish it were the case. I wish that's what RoboCop looked like. RoboCop doesn't look like that. It exists. A California police department has deployed a RoboCop to aid the force in patrolling public areas. The city of Huntington Park officially introduced it on Tuesday. It is meant to serve outdoors. And all I can say is,
You ever watch Doctor Who?
Once or twice.
Remember the Daleks?
Yeah.
It looks like a Dalek.
That looks like a roving trash can.
It looks like a bullet-shaped trash can that says police on it. It has 360-degree video footage, and it's been patrolling for several weeks. They want it to serve as a deterrent to crime and disruptive activity. It rolls down the sidewalk, and it makes various noises, and it can say good day to you. And it's got a Twitter feed, HP RoboCop, and there are some who describe it as a glorified toaster oven or a knockoff of R2-D2. I think it's a good first step. It's certainly better than the other prototype RoboCop with giant machine guns in it.
You don't want that,
everybody up and then tripping and falling over and that whole thing. But we have it. It's the first iteration of RoboCop. I'm just waiting for it to be inevitably vandalized. Is it considered an attack on a police officer? Like, what is the agency?
If you vandalize the trash can?
If somebody just, like, walked over and knocked it over, like, weebles wobble, but they don't fall down, and somebody tried to test that and just sort of knocked over the robo-weeble here, is that assaulting a police officer? How human is it?
I'd kick it over.
Is that like kick it over? Is that like vandalizing a speed camera? See, I'm with you. There's something about
this. How could you not kick that over?
It's begging for it. It is asking to just be gently cow-tipped.
This is one of the best stories I've ever read. Limestone County, Alabama. An attack squirrel was rescued when deputies seized methamphetamine, ammunition, and more at a North Alabama home during a drug bust on Monday. Deputies say Ronnie Reynolds, 37, was arrested during the search. Mickey Polk, 35, is wanted by investigators after he allegedly fed a squirrel meth to keep it aggressive. Investigators said they searched the apartment after they received tips about an attack squirrel being fed meth to keep it aggressive. They found meth, drug paraphernalia, body armor, presumably for people, not the squirrel, ammunition, and a squirrel in a cage. Deputies stated they were unable to safely test the squirrel for meth. Upon advice from state conservation officials, deputies released the squirrel into a nearby wooded area. Reynolds was charged with possession of a controlled substance, that's the meth, possession of drug paraphernalia, and loitering at a known drug house. He was released on $4,000 bond.
If you're going to have an attack animal to which you're going to feed meth, why a squirrel?
I mean, at that point, you figure you got to be so deep in the meth yourself, you're not really making a whole lot of cogent decisions, right?
I know, they're already kind of twitchy and jumpy, and they scream a lot, too.
I figure this guy is like, well, I've got the squirrel already, and here's all of my meth. I think I'll combine the two. I'll see if this squirrel wants wanted the meth.
It's not a Reese's peanut butter cup.
But if only it was.
You got your peanut butter and my chocolate. You got your squirrel and my methamphetamine.
If the meth is...
They're great together.
If the meth is good enough, I think a squirrel might look like a Reese's.
Len Kaplan is coming up. He is going to talk Cubs baseball with us. He's had an interesting last couple of days, a couple of interesting broadcasts. In all of these circumstances, the Cubs are alone in first place, even though they haven't been playing all that well. So a little bit of luck has them where they are. He is going to give us the latest ahead of some draft talk with Sam Vecenie, as we'll get into some NBA after that. Got another hour left. Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.